Welcome to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast with me, Sherry Honeycutt, Life Coach, where I have one mission with this podcast, and that is to help you get out of your velvet rut, to stop living by default and waiting to have the life you crave. This is a podcast where I help you take inspired action, step into the responsibility for your own happiness, and start every day figuring out what you can do to create the life you want, because it won't accidentally happen, my friends. So lean into today's content, make the intention to take away a nugget or two, and more importantly, decide that you're going to implement whatever you take away from here today, because it's on you, baby. It's on you to create that life that you want, and I know you can do it. So let's go. Hey there, have I got a treat for you? I'm super excited that the next few episodes of the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast are a series of conversations that I had with amazing people several years back. In fact, most of them were recorded in the throes of the pandemic. But don't worry, they are full of gems of wisdom that really are evergreen, and I can't wait for you to hear them. So join me on a trip down memory lane over the next few episodes of my podcast, where you will benefit from these never-before-heard, too-good-to-miss recordings that I've had stashed away. And trust me, they're packed with juicy insights that I hope you will enjoy as much as we enjoyed recording them. And remember, it's never too late to start designing your life on purpose. Hey. Good morning, Cindy. I'm so excited to have Dr. Cindy Ackrell with me today. Cindy, how are you?
I'm great this morning. How are you?
Good. I'm so good. I'm so excited about our conversation. You guys, Cindy and I have been friends for a very long time, and that's not the reason she's on this podcast, but it's a nice little bonus. Cindy is truly someone who is a perfect fit for this website, for this podcast, because she has been working and helping people live on purpose. And she's going to give you more about that, about her work around stress and her work around her expertise has really all been in very much in alignment with what we do here. So Cindy, I want to give a little bit of an introduction to you about the official stuff. Can I do that?
Sure.
Okay, good. You know, it's one of those things. Can we read your, you know, your resume? But I do want folks to know a little bit about you.
And it's always uncomfortable to sit through.
Isn't it? Okay, good. So breathe. This is stressful, yeah. Right? It's stressful. So take some of your own advice and breathe through this, right? So, but let me tell you about Cindy. Cindy is a leader and a true leader here, you guys, in the world of stress mastery. And I loved that word when I was reading that on something you sent me, stress mastery. And she makes these connections between the choices that we make and how those choices impact our well-being and give our life meaning. You can see why I invited her on the show. And her background is in primary health, applied neuroscience, leadership, and wellness coaching. And so this mashup of all of these things that Cindy knows has made her really a powerhouse leader. She's a speaker. She's a trainer. She's on the faculty of many coaching schools. She's called on by the media. She's really a leader in this idea around stress. And in her words, she likes to teach or promote real life strategies to tame stress and ramp up self-care. That's awesome, Cindy.
Oh, thank you. I love your word mashup. I've never used that one because it's like, this is the oddest grouping of things that I do. Mashup's perfect.
It's a mashup. It's the best, right?
I'm a mashup.
You're a mashup, yes. And it's phenomenal. And so Cindy, I'm so, oh, let's just take a deep breath. We're getting ready to have a great conversation. Take a deep breath. Oh, I bet you encourage people to do that all the time.
I do.
So I want to know, we talked about before I turned on the record button that often we as speakers and coaches come to our work having come through the door of dealing with our own stuff. Is that true for you?
Oh, totally.
Tell me. Totally. Tell us.
And I think that's also true for a lot of entrepreneurs because you see a need and you go to fill it. But early on in my medical career, I was starting to burn out. And I was going through infertility at the same time, which was not a great layer on top of internship. And my doctors kept saying, you need to stress less. But when I said, how? No answers. And in fact, physicians in general had a very poor understanding of stress at that point. This was in the, okay, dating myself, the 80s. And, and when physicians don't know about something, they tend to shy away from it because they like things they know about and can teach you about. Right. So I early on noticed that my colleagues were burning out, I was burning out, and nobody was giving us any tools. And as I went through life and applied neuroscience, I saw from a brain perspective that when the brain is stressed, it really doesn't learn very well. It doesn't regulate mood very well. It was very obvious that this was important and still no clues about what to do with it. Right. Luckily, science has hugely advanced and we understand it a lot more. And in retrospect, I can look back now and see so many of us in our pursuit of success weren't taught to manage ourselves. We weren't taught to manage our brains, our energy, and to get to what you do for so many of the people that you and I have coached who feel disconnected from their purpose. Stress is often what started that off, that disconnect. Mm-hmm. Now, the disconnect can also cause stress, so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy from that point on.
I call that the do loop.
Exactly. But we over and over feel this disconnect. So I learned about the science of stress and then started to empower people because now the science really shows that if you feel empowered to deal with your stress, it's not as toxic.
Oh, yeah.
But they never gave us the course. You know, where was that course in any of the professional teachings that we've had? Mm-hmm. Where was the course on how to manage your energy or your emotions or, you know, real life.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's a little less, it's harder to manage. I mean, it's harder to see, it's harder to, you know, you can't control it. You don't put the pill down your mouth. You know, you don't see the bone heal. Right.
So
it's harder to probably create that program. Would that be true?
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. I think for an awful lot of high achieving people, for everybody, then there's a layer of shame that adds on to it. It's like, well, how come, especially if I look at Instagram, how come everybody else has their act together? And I'm feeling like I'm, you know, treading water and the water's like slowly creeping.
Seriously. Yeah.
And so there's huge shame for not knowing something that you weren't taught.
Yeah.
Which is so sad.
Yeah, let's let that soak in. Huge shame for not knowing something we weren't taught, right?
Yeah.
And yet we're supposed to do with it. I mean, deal with it, you know, or just do that less, whatever that was, right?
Right, yeah. You know, cut something out like your children.
Yeah.
Or your happiness or your health, you know?
Yeah,
it's pretty sad. And I think also that there are some people who handle it better than others. There's a spectrum, like there's a spectrum for everything of resilience. And I think what's sort of interesting is those of us who are more empathic, more sensitive by nature, which makes us so good at our jobs, are also more susceptible to stress.
Now that makes sense, right? That makes sense.
Yeah.
I remember talking to one of my kids' therapists, and this is not directly related, but she said, sometimes your children are born and they're dandelions, and sometimes children come into the world as orchids. And, and so this idea that just by our nature, we may have a sensitivity or a be more inclined to be stressed.
Yeah.
But it's also a gift in its own way.
I completely agree with that. And, you know, I know that you and I have both been through the world of discovering about attention deficit and all of these different things that people struggle with. They all have gifts. And there's a gift to being sensitive that is exquisite. And it was actually kind of pounded out of me in my medical training, my intuition, my ability to kind of fifth sense what was going on. And I don't mean that I acted, you know, I gave out drugs based on a fifth sense. Right. No, you know, I use science, but there's so much more to that to be able to ask the right question, to be able to see that this person is disconnected from their purpose or from a relationship or from something that really matters to their health.
So let me ask you about that. So back in that day, you're coming through your medical training, you know, it's sort of this, there's, you know, like in any training, they want you to kind of fit into the herd. And
yes.
In some ways, your own uniqueness was a little squashed or maybe not recognized. Did that add to your stress? Do you think that's part of what made you stressed out?
Oh, yeah. And one of the things that I do, and I know a lot of my clients do as well as other humans, is when I start to feel like that, I start playing the comparison game, which is so toxic.
I have no idea what you're talking about. What is this thing called, the comparison game? What is this you think
of? It's like, you know, okay, so Susie seems to be just, you know, nailing this. You know, I don't know that Susie goes home and cries in her pillow or, you know, I don't know. And I think that's one of the beauties of what is coming out of our post-COVID world is a little more realization that we just never know what's going on in somebody else's life.
We do not know below the waist of the Zoom call.
Yeah.
Metaphorically speaking, we don't know, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm getting ready to sound like a really, really old curmudgeon, but I would imagine that with social media, I mean, we were referring a moment ago to Instagram, that for those of us, when we go into stress, which triggers our comparison, which triggers our own shame, and then we don't have to go very far to see a lot of folks who look, quote, better than us, which just exacerbates this cycle of self-flagellation. Yeah. And so what do you recommend? I mean, how do we navigate this new world?
Well, I think one of the things is to understand that process that's going on. So we can, if you take some time for reflection, just recognize it as that. Mm-hmm. Don't judge it. It's a natural process. Our brains are wired for comparison because that helps us with safety. That is one of our primitive wirings. We should be able to compare situations so that we can find safety.
Oh.
And when we're under stress, we go to our more primitive modes. We go to our sort of, I call them like your go-to jeans in the closet.
We go to the things.
Yes, exactly. Jeans, are you kidding?
Are you kidding me?
So we go to these go-to behaviors when we're under duress, because it takes much more energy to be intentional. So we go to our habitual ways of thinking. Another thing to understand about the brain is it really likes to validate its own little model. So if it has a model that we're somehow lesser or that we're suffering, it tends to see the data that proves that.
Right. We want to validate what we
that,
need to be
right,
true.
We're
right?
validating ourselves. I mean, we've all met that person at the cocktail party who's just validating their life. But that's a natural brain mechanism. And if we had true compassion, we'd understand they're probably just nervous. But these are natural tendencies. And I think in the mindfulness movement and the positivity movement, which have just exquisitely beautiful parts to them, we need to be careful to not judge ourselves and to understand our natural tendencies and to have self-compassion for those, to say, oh, look at me. I'm doing the Instagram comparison thing again.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't make me feel good. Maybe I need to just rub my heart a moment, take a few deep breaths and say, okay, what do I really need right now? Why, there it goes. She's so much cooler than I am. Yeah. And if only I owned that, I'd be cool.
If only. Yeah. Cindy, you said about five different things right in that last sentence that are like gold. First of all, you said, I wrote down the word self-compassion as I was listening to you, and then you actually said the word self-compassion. Oh my gosh. You know, when our brains are doing these things, if I'm hearing you correctly, when our brains are doing these things that they're wired to do, which comparison, you know, even go to our defaults, which may be not serving us completely, to sit then and add another layer of shame or judgment on top of that versus self-compassion Yeah. Talk about a double whammy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so do you have anything you want to add about self-compassion?
Listen to Kristen Neff's TED yes. Talk, yeah. read her books. Mm-hmm. Self-compassion, I think, is something that we need to understand as a strength. And it does not mean that we accept being victimized at all. There's something right. called fierce self-compassion, where we actually advocate for justice, for what's mm-hmm. needed. But self-compassion is just being kinder to yourself.
Yeah.
For most of us, if we recorded the track between our ears, oh my goodness, it's not a very pretty not a person.
We would never say those things even to someone we couldn't stand.
Really?
Probably. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So can we just recognize that?
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop automatic thoughts, but right. you can notice them. Mm-hmm. And start to counteract them and meet them with some compassion.
Absolutely. Then you also said that it takes more energy to be intentional. When we were talking about slipping over here into our more reptilian or whatever word you know, that autopilot.
Right.
And so, you know, my work is around living on purpose, being intentional from, you know, what do you do on a Tuesday afternoon to how do you take the actions that you're creating the life you really want. But mm-hmm. that intentionality, you said, takes more energy. And
it does.
And it probably, would it be fair to say that even living intentionally can bring about some kind of new stress?
It can, and it can motivate you to get beyond your stress. So there is a duality mm-hmm. there. So when you're talking about being intentional, you're talking about using your highest brain powers, mm-hmm. which are in your frontal lobe.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last part of the brain to develop. It is largest in a human, and we're very, very attached to it. We think it's always working perfectly. but in reality, the rest of the brain has far more power.
Mm.
And when we're stressed or our energy is depleted for any reason, maybe we're dehydrated, maybe we haven't felt connected. I look at energy as physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And by mm-hmm. spiritual, I mean that connected to purpose, that connected to the people mm-hmm. that matter, your values, your faith, if that's important to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you're depleted in any of those areas, your brain feels it. Well, the first part of your brain to go offline is your frontal lobe,
gotcha.
Because it is the most energy demanding. It was kind of the last in the cherry chain of
yeah.
energy
yeah.
reserves there. It's the slowest. It's hugely energy inefficient compared to the rest of your brain. And so if you're really depleted, you really need to recharge and restore and then look at your intentions.
Oh.
You have to do it from a space where you've got the bandwidth and the powered up frontal lobe to do it.
Oh, that is such beautiful. Yeah.
At the same time,
mm-hmm.
when you have a beautiful purpose, because that's the most highly motivating thing for humans,
mm-hmm.
it can help you do those things that you need to do that.
I love that. Okay. That is so awesome. I'm getting my head around this. I love this idea. So I've said it in other ways around like spiritual stuff. It's like when your energy is really low, it's not the mm-hmm. right time to sit there and craft your new 5-part plan. Right. You know,
world peace.
Yeah. You think let me just go over and do and fix and
right.
all that. But what you're saying is almost a pause or a step back
mm-hmm.
and go, wait a minute, let me get really grounded, healthy through that. And then show back up
whole.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, taking some time to look at the different parts of your life, your different
mm-hmm.
needs.
Mm-hmm.
There are universal needs. I mean, the sleep deprivation in this country is humongous.
Yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, not really. Yeah, that's been I'm being paid back for not understanding it as a young doctor. But when we start to look at the different areas and think, you know, where am I the most depleted and what do I need to fill in to be more of a whole circle, to reattach our heads to our bodies, because we've kind of, you know, Zoom is like the perfect metaphor for here down doesn't matter. And when we get whole again, we may have a completely different perspective than we had when we were feeling desperate and grabbing for purpose.
Beautifully said. And that, oh my gosh, let's just let that soak in. So when we're not whole, I don't know what the word would be, when we're fragmented, maybe, is first of all, there may be signs that we're fragmented, a time for us to step back and be whole, but it is not the time for us to come in and get into this huge, you know, reconstructing your life. We go back and we take care of the basics, right?
Right.
And become whole. And that leads me to something you said a few moments ago too. You said, you know, perhaps there's a somatic response. You put your hand on your heart. And I know the value of literally that kind of physical body movement. Can you speak to some of that as simple tools that folks can do?
Yeah, there are more nerves going from your body to your mind than the other direction in this big complex of vagus nerve, which regulates our autonomic nervous system, which is our both the flight or fight sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic, which is the rest, digest, mend, put ourselves back together, find aberrant cells, precancer cells, and kill them, you know, do all those things that we need to do to be healthy. Well, we can use our bodies to go this way and calm our minds. So when you just bring yourself into diaphragmatic breathing, bringing your diaphragm a little lower, filling your belly, not, you know, it's really staying in your lungs, but letting your belly soften as you breathe in and your diaphragm descends. There's receptors in all of these beautiful feedback systems. The human body is unbelievably cool. And there are these feedback loops that then tell your mind, okay, it really is okay. And that will dampen down that stress response that keeps you from being able to use your frontal lobe. So practicing that, this relaxation response that was coined by Herbert Benson at Harvard years ago and kind of poo-pooed by regular medical society for a while until somebody said, oh, that matters. Medicine is very slow. When you use this relaxation response and whatever triggers it for you, it can just be breath, which just happens to be free, invisible, and you can do it anywhere, anytime. Or you're doing progressive relaxation where you tighten a muscle and then you let it go. You're listening to a relaxation guided meditation on something like Insight Timer or Calm or Headspace. There's so many ways you can explore to see what relaxes you and then train your body to go there more often. Train your body to find neutral more often. The problem is we've been living in like 15th gear. And one of the things that's in our frontal lobe is our self-awareness. So the longer we live in this revved state, the less we recognize it, the less we recognize neutral again. So we actually have to do a little work to come back to neutral and start to recognize that again. And the beauty that overlaps what you're doing is when you get to neutral, it's so much easier to find your grounded space. And to have your purpose come from a grounded space instead of that space, as you said, of trying to do it, fix it, you know, if I just do this, and what I'll call the one more thing syndrome, you know, it's like, if I just wipe down the kitchen counter, I'm going to be a whole human.
Who knew it was so simple, right? Wow. So, so this is so good. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking of a couple of stories and thinking about my own resistance. I have so many stories of my own resistance to this, poo-pooing this idea. I remember one of my, I used to share an office back with someone, and she would leave a couple of times a week to go get to go get a massage or go get acupuncture. And I would just under my bath go, oh my really? God, seriously. You know, it's like, you know, and I was both a martyr and judging, you know, it's like, damn, she needs so much self-care. And really I was craving, I was just, you know, my own resistance. Yeah. And really it was my own story of, you know, just suck it up, buttercup. You know,
yeah.
You know, just suck it up and just be tough, yeah. Girl.
And
I have another story. I'll just tell you this real quick. When I first got married to my first husband, and it was in the era of the VHS tapes that tells you how long ago, I brought home from work a VH tape that was on stress reliever, you know, to do this mm-hmm. stress tape. And my husband at the time said, "That's great. You definitely need that. I'll go out into the garage while you do it." Well, he came in to go to the bathroom and he caught me. Are you ready for this? He caught me fast forwarding to the end. I want to be stress free as fast as freaking possible.
So, that is just so perfect. But our society has rewarded that behavior for decades.
Yes. Yeah.
The person who stayed latest at the office was rewarded. There is actually a term that, and I'm blanking on it, but the taxi drivers have in New York for picking up the legal interns at like 2 a.m., taking them home for a shower and getting them back to the office by 4 a.m.
Yeah,
because we have been rewarded for it.
Yeah.
As well as there is a positive to it because there's an internal, as you use the word story, we learn to self-motivate with that judgment and that harangue in our minds. It got us places. It got us places from the inside, and it was, you know, patted on the head from the outside. Oh, good girl, tough buttercup.
Yeah, you know. So and then I imagine there's that adrenaline rush that comes with all of that, you know. And so then the other thought I was having as you were talking is that how easy it is for us to dismiss the simplicity of, if you will, of stopping to breathe, of taking a respite, that somehow even our solutions to a problem need to be more complex. And really in this arena, it's not that, it's not that complex.
Yeah. I call it tweaks, baby steps. Baby steps to, I mean, you've been doing this for a heck of a long time. Mm-hmm. Much of it is habitual. So to undo it, you've got to build new habits, and new habits take intention and repeated attention to that intention so that you can rewire it in your mind, and then you can insulate it with myelin and it becomes a new habit. Mm-hmm. But you need to take it in tiny bites and make it something that doesn't, it's got to be so little that your resistance is kind of, you know, tripped. Like, one breath. So I start a lot of, I used to do a lot of leadership workshops pre-COVID. Miss people. But just before you go into a meeting, as you walk through that doorway, take one solid deep breath. One solid deep breath. And then the next couple of weeks after you've been doing that, add something to it. Ask yourself who you want to be on the other side of that door. And just little teeny, teeny things like that add up.
They do. And I imagine that some folks listening to this might question that's enough, but it really is. I mean, you and I both have evidence of that those tiny little habits, being intentional, build on itself. You know, in the same way that tiny little bad habits, and I use the word bad, I mean, counterproductive to where you want to go, also add up. You know, it's like...
Or maladaptive habits. Something that worked when you were 13 and you were, you know, embarrassed by a boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know, and you created this story and habit around it that you then practiced throughout your first marriage.
Don't need that anymore.
We can't see those for ourselves, but these little things start to open up our perspective. Because one of the things that happens when we're stressed is our perspective narrows and we don't see beyond our stories.
Right.
So these little steps add up to opening up the door. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's awesome if you can do a little bit more than one breath as you go through the doorway. Mm-hmm. If you can promise that you're going to listen to a 5-minute meditation once a day, or you're going to close your office door for 5 minutes and not look at technology, or put on one song or watch a funny YouTube. I think there's a fear for those of us who've been living in 15th gear that, or personally reveal, I'm very ADD. There's a fear that I'm going to lose my focus, that I'm going to lose my drive if I take that 5-minute break. And the reality is exactly the opposite. They did a study years ago where they took kids who were exam taking and took them on a 20-minute walk. They scored higher. You know, it's, we have the proof. It's just, we need to change our story.
Right. We need to change our story. We need to, and for folks listening to this, I know that I had to hear this over and over again to sort of, to really, because I was trained, if you will, to think the opposite, you know, run, 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 you know, and so now you get this thing, well, yeah, no, take a 20 minute break. You'll produce more. What? That makes no sense. You know?
Yeah. I guess.
So I just want to kind of highlight, because I've got a couple of other questions I want to ask you, but I just want to highlight some of the amazing, amazing gifts you've given us that I'm hearing from you. First of all, to understand that we are all of us, I mean, you didn't say this verbatim, but we're all going to have stress, right? We can't have a life without stress, but the way, and that some of us are going to handle it differently. It's a spectrum. So you may be, you may decide or notice that you are on a spectrum where you have, you're a more sensitive person. And so you, you come in and you may be more susceptible to stress, but it also may be the flip of that is you're also wildly gifted in other arenas. And if you're coaches and therapists and those kind of folks,
or you may have a period of life where you're more susceptible to it. And the question is, what's going on?
Good
you know,
point.
Why is, why am I more tender or more irritable? What's going on in my life? And digging under that to say, you know, I'm kind of going in the wrong direction, or, you know, this relationship I'm in isn't feeding me. So there are times when we're more susceptible. I think it's also important to note that stress itself is not always bad.
Right.
We need stress or we'd be bored. It's a bell curve, and we need some stress to get to peak performance. We need a challenge.
Exactly.
To rise to the occasion. When we get to peak performance is when we feel like we have the resources to deal with that challenge.
Right.
Maybe it's just on our edge and then we get creative. But without it, you know, we need it to get going.
You know, I have this thing called the seven tenets of living on purpose. And one of those, and I'm still fleshing it out, but I think you've just sort of validated my thought here, is that we need to navigate and even cultivate some level of tension. We don't, it's like a drum. There's got to be enough tension so that the sound is really good. Too much and it's pingy, too loose. So there is, and stress may be actually the thing there, that there's got to be enough, you know, tension in your life to have you produce. The key is not letting it make you sick.
I think that maybe the update I would say to that is the recovery has to match the tension.
Ooh, say more.
So we can be on and, you know, you and I can run a workshop and we are on.
Yeah.
We need the recovery because when we did them back to back, we found out the hard way. Like, what was I saying? Because our brains are misfiring. So we need the tension to get going, but everything in nature oscillates. The space oscillates. The rhythms in our bodies oscillate from on and off and on and off. And it's the recovery that has to match the on. So we can do amazing things if we build in replenishing that energy. All four kinds of energy.
Right. So I would imagine, so we're coming out of COVID. So COVID, depending on where you were in that, if you're in healthcare, for example, yeah. you know, your recovery from what you've had to show up to do, it's not going to look like what it did pre-COVID, where you could just take a, you know, a long weekend or, you know,
right.
It's going to have, so whatever's yeah. been, you know, or we're nursing a partner with cancer, or we've had to do a big move, or we've just lost our job, right? Those kind of recovery right. has got to match. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And it's different for different people, and that recovery looks different. I mean, there was a lot of trauma with all of this as well, which has a different
sure. yeah.
part
yeah.
to it. And I think it's important to say that people who really have PTSD, some of the mindfulness activities can be triggering. So that requires help. But if only we had the same thing on our foreheads that we have on our cell phone that tells us our battery level. Because we take better care of our cell phones than we take care of our own energy. So it would be really lovely if we had ways to quantitate this. And it gets really hard. So a lot of what I do when I work with clients or in workshops is we kind of do an energy audit where we look at the, you know, where are you right now with your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual energy? And then we look at what are the things that deplete it, and what are the things that build it up for you?
Yeah.
Some of those things are the same. We all need more rest, you know, but for other, some of those things are really individual. If you're an introvert, you need time away. If you're an extrovert, you need more social time.
Right.
The different things that replete you, those are individual, and just taking the time to figure that out is so powerful. And will bolster your purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to make a plug for something, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it's inherently challenging for us to see our own stuff. So when you know, this is why coaches, therapists, best friends, masterminds, any, you know, a place where you can create a community where somebody can hold up a mirror for you. I'll just speak for myself. I have a hard time, and this is my training. I have a hard time seeing my own stuff. So working with a professional or even just coming together with pals is important.
Yeah. Or putting together a group and having a workshop to explore. Or your work team, because, you know, we need to change the conversations in the workplace.
Yeah.
They need to be about what makes you able to do your best work.
Absolutely. You know what? That would be a whole different podcast. I have to tell you, I've been thinking about that for the last 8 months because I don't know. I do a lot of work in healthcare and particularly in public health. And I've just been sort of sitting on the sidelines and worrying to death. You know, it's like, so that we may have another whole conversation about that. So self-compassion, self-awareness and insight to the much so we can do it, understanding that stress, that there's some brain stuff here. I mean, these are wired these ways and that being intentional, being observant, being intentional about how we deal with it. I think the undercurrent or the overarching umbrella is that self-compassion, trying to have non-judgment of wherever you are in the moment, right?
And being curious to figure that out. I think curiosity is just amazing. It turns our brains on. It ramps up your frontal lobe and allows you to start to understand. I mean, your brain's number one job is to keep you safe.
Yeah.
And it will do that at the expense of every other function it has.
Yeah.
And we've had a world that has been unsafe. So how do we build back trust that makes it okay for our brains to function at their best?
Beautiful. Yeah. Big question. And I think it's interesting. Almost every podcast I've been recording, the word curiosity comes up. And your face just lit up. If you're just listening to this, you need to know that Cindy's face just lit up when she was talking about curiosity. And I got chill bumps just to understand in that place, because you can't be really judgmental if you're curious. Right. And it's just asking the right question and then so we should all sort of collectively be curious about what's this post pandemic, if you will. How do we how can we do this differently? Right?
And
maybe one of the lemonade that comes out of this is we're going to have more conversations around stress. We're going as a society, as a culture.
I hope so. I mean, There's definitely been more conversations about mental health, which is The beginning. I'd like to see it get out of the disease model completely and into the how do we make ourselves mentally and physically whole. You know, definitely diseases need to be treated, but we've been a disease model world, and it would be nice to see this as, you know, what promotes our best well-being and how we create community around that and conversation around that to keep it in our awareness. Because again, repeated attention to our intention is the only thing that's going to help us change.
Yeah. Repeated attention. Our intention. Right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. So I have a couple of questions, a couple of other things, and some of these questions I asked, we may have already covered, but I want to know, and these are a little bit about you personally, and you can say, next question. I don't want to answer. Okay. So how do you know when you're, my question is, how do you know when you're in the flow and living on purpose? But maybe the question is, how do you know when you're in the stress mode or when you're out of flow? What do you know?
I think it's important to begin to recognize both. We're so unaware of that. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes people confuse flow with productivity.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they overlap, but they're not always the same thing. Flow should have an ease to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, which took me 10 years to learn to say, has a lovely book on flow. And it is at the peak performance mode where there's a lot less effort and there's a clarity to it. Mm-hmm. And you're just doing and going forward. And it takes less effort to be there. So you're not as stressed doing it. I think probably for a lot of us starting to notice those moments, and then also notice the moments where we're really totally out of it. And we've all spent a half an hour at our computers doing 5 minutes of work. to start to notice that more and develop an awareness of the whole thing and then get curious. What got me to that state of flow? What got me to that state of the opposite, mired in and stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And how can I do more of one and less of the other?
Right. So possibly one of the signs, and maybe is this true for you, when you start to feel like you're spinning your wheels or things start to feel like you're having to effort so much more,
right,
is a sign that, oh, maybe I need to be curious about what's happened here. Yeah. So when you personally, again, whatever you want to share about this, but when you discover that for yourself, what do you do? How do you
discover flow or discover
lack of flow?
Lack of flow.
Yeah. How do you get back on purpose? How do you get back into your intentions?
I stop and I do a bit of a quick energy audit, you know, where am I physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually right now? And for me, sometimes I'm really just tired. I have a little bit more of a dashboard in that I have autoimmune issues.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of issues, but autoimmune is one of them. don't think that professionals don't have issues.
Right, exactly.
I have autoimmune things that give me more pain indicators. But for a lot of people, it's learning, and that's something I do in workshops all the time. What is your dashboard? And then that's the point of backing up and knowing, you know, oh, I'm getting more snippy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting more judgmental. I'm getting more comparison oriented. Noticing what yours is. I'm getting a headache. I'm holding my whole, you know, gut and pelvis tight.
Yep.
For everybody, it's really different. And just learning to identify yours and then just use it as a sign, like your cell phone battery. Ooh, stop, roll your shoulders, take a deep breath, get up, walk around. What is it? You know, drink some water. Think about what you need to do to shift instead of just banging your head against the wall, trying to get your brain to work. Give it what it needs.
Right. Beautiful. So I love this concept of the dashboard. I do. I mean, I got this visual and that you stop. And then it's a bit of self-awareness. Like I'll know when I am in heavy comparison and I start to hear my language and when I start to lose everything or I'm starting to be really clumsy. I mean, you know, these are just things I've learned over time.
Yeah.
It's like,
okay,
I'm depleted. you know, and because
right.
shortly
it's your brain in default.
Exactly.
Or your brain misfiring.
Yeah.
We do get more forgetful.
Yeah. And then I become just more reactive, less creative, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, my brain gets stuck. So what is the part of your routine that keeps you centered, Cindy?
So I do meditate, but I have a super busy brain, and I, like many people, thought that meditation was like clearing it out. And I, well, that's never happening. And then I realized, I learned that that doesn't have to happen. That's not what it is.
Right.
So I listen to a guided meditation. I love Insight Timer because there's a zillion different things on there for length of time that you want to do it, for the purpose of why you want to do it, whether you need to go to sleep or you're in pain or, you know, whatever you need is there. So I let somebody else help me.
Sure.
I get outside, and that's another gift of COVID. More people got outside and more articles came out on the power of nature. There was an article just years ago about how ADD kids brain waves got more organized when they were out in nature. And it's like, and that kind of came and went. It's like, it's so critical
us
to be outside. That grounds me. I live in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. And I, you know, I had the luxury of getting in trees very easily. So, and the ocean is one of my go-to places.
Sure.
But nature truly helps connecting with friends. And I think that's also an interesting point. When we feel really down and out or stressed out, we tend to withdraw and we actually need the very opposite thing. We need to connect. The humans actually have a social brain and a social brain is really important to our safety. It's important for me to know that you and I are on the same place to feel safe to have this conversation.
Right.
That's all wired into us.
Yeah.
So connecting to friends when we are kind of afraid to call and say, you know, I really need you right now. I'm like not doing well. And you know, it's key to have that team.
Yeah.
It's really key to have that team.
It's a great reminder. And you know, I have discovered for myself, I don't know if this is true for others, but I've discovered for myself when I'm in stress, the thing that I'm resisting is typically the very thing I need. Meaning, you know, you're like, oh, I just can't get out of the house. And that's the time I need to go for a walk, you know, or I'm wanting sugar. That's the last thing I need. You know, it's like if I do just sort of the opposite, the George Costanza of stress management, whatever I want, just do the opposite.
Write it down and then go do it.
Write it down. Like, no, that's not.
Yeah.
What is the thing I don't want to do? That's what you need
and
to
that's,
do.
That's part of identifying, okay, those are signs for you.
Yeah.
And love yourself through those signs.
Right.
That's self-compassion.
Yeah, self-compassion. You know,
and love yourself when you give in to them.
Yeah.
I have quite a relationship with chocolate. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my stronger relationships in life.
It's let you down the least, right? Chocolate
yeah,
is not
exactly.
Let you down.
I mean, really, occasionally it's kind of
but yeah, for the most part.
But for the most part, it's really there for me. So, you know, and sometimes I give in, and okay, big deal. It is a fabulous chemical for my brain.
Exactly.
But you know, so what? I mean, I talked to a friend recently who gained weight after her husband died. Big deal.
Big deal.
You know, you'll get it off again, but you were hurting.
Right.
We have got to be kinder.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and then have curiosity. Mm-hmm. It's not about towing the line all the time. It's about recovering.
So my next question was going to be, if you had to reduce down something you really wanted people to know, and you put it on a bumper sticker.
And
you may have just said it, but what comes to mind? What would you really want people to remember?
The Velveteen Rabbit. We're trying to be real. You know, and real is really you. You do you. And you get curious about what that is so that you have more clarity around it. And you learn what really turns you on, not what you were told is important,
right.
not you know, what you feel from your cells to your higher thoughts aligns with who you are and what's important.
Right.
And again, you know, gift of COVID, I think a lot of people got to reflect on their values. My hope is that there are people like you out there taking time and helping people to capture that figure out how to align with it, because that's just critical now. And we need, as you said earlier, we need help to do that. You asked me before what keeps me grounded. I need a constant infusion of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To keep out of my old stories.
Exactly.
So, you know, I just got the new Tara Brach book. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Good.
You know, I need to hear this stuff.
Yep. Yeah. So it's the diet. We need to eat. We need to partake of a diet and be connected with those people. And then the what I'm hearing is when this, how it dovetails with my work, is that is making sure that we're actually creating the life that we really want, not the one that was set out for us, not the one that somebody else wanted us to have. And I used to, when I worked with business women, I would say, you know, you want to make sure that the ladder you're climbing is actually leaning up against the building you actually want to be at the top of, you know, and the same thing with our life. And so, and when that happens, it's not perfect every day, but mm-hmm. we do, it is easier, right? When we're in alignment.
It's easier in the long run. First part. I have a thing of the mindset of the C's: calm, curious, which we talked about, mm-hmm. compassionate, clear, and courage is one of them.
Courage, absolutely.
In the beginning, everybody else has expectations of you, mm-hmm. and they probably align with your stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you've created some of those yourself. Some of them were dealt to you.
Yep.
But it takes courage to say, I want to move the ladder.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's often what brings people into coaching with me and some places mm-hmm. where they've all of a sudden, I like to say, the rock in their shoe got so big they had to actually stop
exactly.
and take it out.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more courageous than saying, I want to shift where I'm going.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Cindy, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I have one last question. Speaking of chocolate, is it milk or dark?
Well, it used to be milk, but then I got a little health conscious, so I changed to dark, but I'm really kind of picky now. And, you know, I live in a place that has great chocolates.
Good. So you've moved over to the dark side.
I've moved over to the dark side. I did get through medical school on M&Ms. They were always in my pocket, but you know.
Yeah. Well, we do what we have to do, right?
Yeah.
Cindy, I can't thank you enough. Oh my God, you are so frickin' smart, and you're so
much fun.
No, you're so smart, and your passion is palatable, and you're a gift to the world. And thank you so much for giving
you're so
us
sweet.
Your time.
Well, you are just a gift.
Ah, well, I love you, girlfriend.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for listening to the Design Your Life on Purpose podcast, and I sure hope that you're taking away something that you can begin to use today. Speaking of things you can use, I have lots of free things over at sherryhoneycutt.com, and the one I want to highlight at today's podcast is something I call Work Your Butt Off, and I spell it B-U-T. Let's get those butts worked off, and it is a 30-day program to help you get your butts off the couch. It's 30 videos, it's a 75-page workbook, I think, and it's free to help you begin to take deliberate action toward getting that thing or those things done. So that's what I've got for you. I would love to invite you over to sherryhoneycutt.com. Click under cool stuff and you'll find that. You'll also find the link in the show notes and in the description of this podcast. Y'all, I'm here to help you take action, because action is how we begin to get new thoughts around our life. So go check it out. Get your free copy of this course that I've designed, and go and design your best life. Until next time.